Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC podcasts are supported by Holy Name Hospital in Teaneck, New Jersey, providing comprehensive centers in cardiovascular services, interventional radiology, and cancer care. More information at www.holyname.org.
And I want to move the town to the Glass City Rocker. You need a little jump of electrical shocker. Better leave town if you only want to knock us.
This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and online at WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer. Remember being a teenager and running to the record store to get the newest, coolest album? It was an activity with plenty of excitement and satisfaction. But does that feel like ages ago? Got us to wondering, do our tastes change? Or even worse, do they stop changing? We can't stay kids forever, or can we? To get to the bottom of what happens to the aging music fan, we have Ann Powers, formerly of Blender Magazine and the incoming music critic at the LA Times, joining us. Ann, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Hey, happy to be here.
And we're also joined by Adam Sternberg, who recently wrote an article about the aging hipster for New York Magazine. Adam, thank you for joining us.
Hi.
And let me start with you. Is there an age, sort of a general age, when people stop keeping up with the Joneses, buying new music? I mean, is there an age of change of musical taste?
Well, I'm 42, so I hope not so for me. But I think what I've observed is that it's very much bound to what a sociologist might call cultural capital, and this is where Adam can get into it too. I think there's a certain sort of stratum of people who pride themselves on keeping up with new trends, or at least with some of them, some of the new trends, while perhaps the great mass of people have a different attitude. Certainly when I was reviewing concerts for the New York Times, what I would observe is that the baby boomers would be at the concerts of their favorite artists often from the past. You know, mm-hmm. Go to Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and you've definitely got 60-year-old investment bankers next to you smoking cigars. They might not be in the audience at a hip-hop show, though, certainly not, but they might have heard of someone like Ray LaMontagne because they're looking for that kind of music. So it really varies across race, class, even gender lines.
Adam, the idea of cultural capital that Anne brings up, is that basically, were you seeing a lot of that, you know, in the people that you interviewed for this article?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, Anne makes a good point that there's always been the kind of person who tries to keep up on the music that they liked when they were young. So even though they're in their 50s or 60s, they'll go see the band that they loved when they were in their 20s. The difference now, I think, is that you can go to, you know, a band where the people in the band are in their 20s, a band like Interpol or the Decemberists or, you know, an indie band now, and you'll see people who are 35, 40, 45 at the concert because they're not interested in just listening to the music they listened to when they were 20. They're interested in listening to what's hot now.
And that seems, what Adam's talking about, that seems to break a pattern of pop music, which is, it seems like each decade has kind of rebelled or reacted to the music of the decade before. You think of the 60s in reaction to the 50s,
right.
Punk in the 70s as a reaction
right.
to the increasing, you know, orchestration, the big sound of rock music in the late 60s, early 70s.
Right.
Why has that cycle broken?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, I think when we look at the history of popular music now, we realize that this cycle was not exactly as you're describing, even though we want to think of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
For example, while, yes, punk seemed like a split from, certainly was a split from arena rock, the connections between, like, hippie and punk were very strong. I mean, look at Patti Smith. She's certainly a bridge figure, to mention someone who's still performing
right.
into her 50s. So, in fact, every generation took as much from the previous generation as they rebelled against it. So that's one thing. But the other thing which Adam touched on in his piece, which I have to say to him that my friends immediately were emailing each other, like, this is us, this is really freaking us out when we read the piece, was that the generation that some call X or indie rockers, lifestyle was very important to them from a young age in terms of thinking of themselves as sustaining a lifestyle for the rest of their lives. And so I think there was an ethic built into sort of the indie culture that he was specifically describing that has kept people young or supposedly or seemingly young
yeah.
on the surface and kept them interested in music.
Now, but when that hasn't happened, why has it seemed like at some point we all become our parents? Why does that?
You know, well, my parents were listening to the swing radio band. You know, they were old, so they listened to the swing era music. So it was kind of different for me.
And they were appalled at your music when you were a kid. And
incomprehensible to them.
So why does that happen?
Well, I think, I do think music is, in some ways, it's a vehicle for youthful expression. It's interesting, Adam mentioned the Decemberists. I mean, those guys are in their... the leader's in his 30s, so you know, with indie rock, it might take a while for the band to even get a national reputation, and the players might be a little older by the time they hit fame. But, I mean, I think the huge thing that we're not touching on in this conversation yet is hip-hop, and that is the great divide now. You will see people in their 45-year-olds at a Decemberist concert or a Broken Social Scene concert, but I would wonder if you'd see them at a T-Pain concert, you know, or something like that. That is something I was curious to hear about from Adam, my fellow guest.
All right.
I think when you bring hip-hop into the picture, the conversation shifts.
Adam, that's we're speaking with Ann Powers, who will soon be a music critic at the Los Angeles Times, Adam Sternberg of New York Magazine. Adam, one of the things that struck me about your article, and it was perhaps most striking in the photographs that accompanied it, was, you know, you're talking about largely a white and well-off
yes.
group of people who can afford to kind of spend the time and the money to stay au courant with what's up in indie music. But as Anne says, you know, a vast majority of this country isn't listening to that music, and how, you know, are they staying current?
Yeah, I think you're definitely right. I mean, I'm certainly talking about a group of sort of affluent, urban types who, you know, as Anne said, whose like lifestyle indicators have always been very important to them. And I think when these people, like myself, you know, when we were in our 20s in the early 90s, we never thought of that phase as being something we were moving through to get to something else, like adulthood. It was sort of, we just thought, okay, we're going to live our lives differently and we're, you know, cling to this
right.
indie ethos as long as possible. And people have asked me sort of, what about Kanye West? What about hip hop? And certainly, I mean, I find that while I listen to the same rock bands as people, 20-year-olds that I work with, they will mention rap groups to me that I've never heard of. And I, you know, for a time was fairly up on hip hop. Mm-hmm. Although I do think what's interesting is that people my age and older, you know, 35 and up, we are the first generation who take hip-hop seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I was in high school was when hip-hop was being born.
Right.
So while I don't feel like I know, you know, the hot new label and who's the hot artist in hyphy and, you know, all that stuff, I do feel like I don't listen to hip-hop and go, oh, what's this horrible noise? Turn that off. The way that, you know, my parents did when I was playing Public Enemy.
Right. All right. Now, one of the other things that Adam mentions in his article is, and Adam, you mentioned it just a few minutes ago as well, is, you know, people who did come of musical age in the 80s and loved the sound of the bands of that period are now finding those sounds echoed in the music being made by 20 and 30-year-olds. I mean, Interpol, band
mm-hmm.
based here in New York, a very popular band. Let's listen to a little bit. This is PDA from their first album. All right, Interpol, very much a hot item on the rock scene these days, especially here in New York, but really everywhere. And more than one critic and music fan has noted their similarity to the late 70s, early 80s band Joy Division.
Oh,
All right, so that's Joy Division. Adam Sternberg, how much do you think people in their late 30s, early 40s are really conscious of, you know, the fact that what they're listening to and liking now is coming out of the music they liked when they were teenagers and early 20s?
I think they are conscious of it, and I think that, you know, it's been pointed out to me that every musical movement obviously borrows on things that have come from the past. You know, grunge had roots in the punk movement and the New Romantics movement in the 80s. Borrowed a lot from rockabilly. I mean, you'll hear echoes of things, but there is a way, I think, and I'd be interested to see what Anne has to say, that music now is, a lot of it is just about strenuously recreating the sound of a particular era, almost as a way of communicating your credibility to your fans. Mm. And it's not so much, it's not you're hearing influences, but you're actually hearing bands which seem dedicated to recreating a sound from a particular time. And on the one hand, because I like the music the first time around, you know, I like those bands. But right. On the other hand, I feel like, you know, if I was 19 or 20 right now, I might feel a little ripped off that no one's, or, you know, I'm sure there's people out there doing it, but that the mainstream of rock music is about sort of recreating something that's not really yours.
And?
Yeah, well, I've thought a lot about this, and particularly with Interpol. I remember when the first record came out, a lot of sort of intergenerational critic arguing, like the older critics were all like, come on, this is a Joy Division rip completely, and the younger critics are like, no, it totally doesn't sound like Joy Division, which, you know, you're just not getting how they're saying that when you were around the first time. But, I mean, a couple points. First of all, I think this is where hip-hop as a general influence does have an impact, because hip-hop is based on sampling, a lot of it, on sort of constructing new music from older sounds. So it just seems inevitable to me that that would change the kind of idea of what originality is that younger artists are dealing with. So that's one thing. Another thing is, I think bands like Interpol, or I was just listening to the new record by a band called the Futureheads, British band, who sounds very much, the first record sounded to me exactly like the Jam with harmonies. And this new record actually sounds fresher. So sometimes it's just about a band cutting their teeth and figuring out who they are, and they're doing that in public. So they kind of do what Adam's saying, like this rehearsal at first, and then come into their own. So, you know, and then the third thing is that I was remembering when I was like 22 and really into this scene in the Bay Area or in the L.A., California, called the Paisley Underground, which was totally people just doing Neil Young, basically, mm-hmm. you know, and other psychedelic bands of the 60s. And so it's not the first time this kind of intense revivalism, I mean, down to like wearing the clothes. It's happened. Even that has happened before.
Well, and Adam, to go back to your article, I mean, it's not just about music. I mean, it is a whole lifestyle, I think, you know, lifestyle markers, and that includes the clothing and, you know.
Right. Sure.
So, but music does seem to be central to this.
Yeah,
I think it is central. And in fact, the article that I wrote started more or less as an article about music. And then we thought, well, maybe we should talk a bit about clothes. Maybe we should talk a bit about kids. Maybe we should talk a bit about work. And it kind of expanded out. But definitely music is very central to it. But I think because music has always been something that people use as a way of sort of defining themselves culturally and defining their tastes.
All right. One of the things I wanted to ask you both about is, I mean, look, you know, you might enjoy Interpol if they remind you of Joy Division, but
right. There's
a lot of people who either didn't know or didn't like Joy Division the first time around.
Mm.
And there are a lot of people who reach, you know, their 40s, let's say, and find themselves being drawn to a kind of music that maybe when they were 20 they would have just thrown their hands up and said, oh, that's hopelessly old-fashioned. I would never listen to that.
Like jazz.
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly, Anne, that's exactly where I'm going here. And, you know, not to knock someone like Diana Krall, we just happen to have one of her songs queued up, but, you know, she's drawing a lot of attention from, you know, rock fans who are reaching a certain age.
Right.
And I think, you know, regardless of what we're talking about here, we are still seeing an age of change that hits a lot of listeners, and maybe we can widen the conversation to some of our Soundcheck listeners in a moment. We'll open up the phones, 212-264-7483. That's 212-264-7483.
Como si fuera esta noche la última vez. Bésame, bésame mucho.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. We're talking about musical generation gaps, and maybe there's a generation gap missing right now. We're speaking with Adam Sternberg, who wrote an article about the aging music hipster for New York Magazine recently, and with Ann Powers, formerly of Blender Magazine, and now moving on to become music critic at the Los Angeles Times. And, you know, we sort of went into the break there wondering, you know, if it's almost a biological imperative for people.
Biological clock.
Yeah, right. At some point, you just got to listen to jazz and classical music because you're slowing down as you hit middle age. Let me read an email that came to us from Stephen in Brooklyn. He writes, I am turning 40. I have suddenly found myself listening to the canonized European classics and American standards. And this from a guy who says that in his youth he was listening to Can and Talk Talk and Cabaret Voltaire and Television and all the other post-punk bands.
Hmm.
Is Stephen turning into a pod person? Or, I mean, what's going on here?
Well, I want to say something. I feel like the trend that Adam identified, which is leaving people like Stephen in the dust here, people continuing to listen to underground rock specifically. It's kind of unfortunate for jazz because where's the audience going for that? It reminds me of like the crisis of that happened in American Christianity before the current wave of revival fundamentalism, the kind of hipster fundamentalism that's going on. Like you go to church and everyone was white-haired, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering like if people aren't aging into jazz, who's going to jazz concerts anymore, you know?
Although it seems like, you know, 3 years ago, the big debate was about the fact that when everyone was still kind of pre-iPod freaking out about Napster and all that sort of stuff, there was this idea that, well, all the kids are going to go get their music for free on the internet, so the record companies need to appeal to the older listener, and everyone was thinking that Norah Jones was the wave of the future, you know, that they should just start making this kind of very easy listening pseudo jazz for older listeners. And I mean, I think the one thing that you can't ignore is the influence of technology and the fact that I know for a person like myself, you know, 20 years ago, if you were 40 and you had kids and you wanted to keep up on what was going on with alternative music, you'd have to find obscure magazines and you'd have to go to like the out of the way record store. And now you can just go to your computer and go to I like the Decemberists. Who also bought this? They bought, you know, Neutral Milk Hotel. So I'll download that, and all of a sudden you've got it. And so it's taken all the legwork out of it.
All right. Well, let's take some calls and some emails. Our email address is soundcheck@wnyc.org, and the inbox is filling up fast. Chris writes to us, the reason the generation gap is no longer an issue, we don't have that big generations. I mean, the baby boomers, that's a big generation. But now look what's happened. I mean, it's just like one on top of the other, and it's almost like nostalgia for last month, you know? I mean, the generations are coming so fast and furious, it seems, that it's hard to define them.
Well, I think one thing on that subject, which Adam also addressed, is I'm just totally praising you, Adam, but that about the parenting issue as well. I mean, a certain class of people are parenting later. I mean, I have a two-year-old, so so that kind of changes everything as well. I mean, if people become parents in their early 20s, maybe they do age a little faster or something. I mean, or maybe they assume a quote-unquote adult role and their cultural relationship, the relationship to culture changes. Whereas, you know, if you've been like going along being indie cool and then you suddenly become a parent at 40, you're not going to change as fast. So I think that really answers to this whole question of what even is a generation anymore. You know, it's hard to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely ironic that previously it was thought that a generation was about 20 years because when you were 20-ish, that's when you started having kids. And yet those generations actually seemed taste-wise to be further apart. And now you have people who are 35 and up who have 5-year-olds, and yet they're trying to listen to the same music and basically be like they wear the same shoes as their kids do.
Well, and
which I have to say drives me insane, okay? Like if my kid wants to listen to the Wiggles, I'm just going to go in the other room and let her do it, you know?
Right, right. you know, and we came back from the break with the Rolling Stones. I mean, you know, I have a brother who's 18, 19 years younger than me. I have nieces and nephews who are like almost 35 years younger than me. And, you know, so there's like three generations just in my family of people
like
listening
to
the Rolling Stones. You know, the guys, they've never gone away.
Well, you know,
God
one thing
bless
about
them.
The Stones is that they really embraced the whole notion of themselves as geriatric in a way that I think is super genius. You know, it's like they're old, they look horrible, they look ridiculous up there, and they love it. And they've been selling that for 20 years now. You know, mm-hmm. they've been old for 20 years. And I think that that was a strategy on their part. I really do.
Was it a strategy, or are they just being themselves? I mean, there's a certain honesty, Anne, in what they're doing there.
My dear, the celebrities are never themselves.
Yeah, all right. Ridiculously naive question to ask. Let's see if we can get any bright ideas from our listeners on the line. We'll begin with Steve in Connecticut. Steve, hi. Welcome to Soundcheck.
Sean, thanks for taking the call. I'm 54, and I go now, my kids are grown, and I come into town a lot to see shows at the Bowery Ballroom, Irving Plaza, Roseland, the Nokia Theater. And while, you know, I'm really holding up the older crust of the audience, one of the things that I do notice, I'm a Fillmore East veteran. I mean, I could appreciate now that Fillmore East had seats, and that so many of the venues now have no seats, and oftentimes the bills are stacked, so the band you want to see, the headliner, is often there after three and a half hours of three or four opening acts, the economics of which I don't understand. And so you're really on your feet for almost 3-4 hours. I was wondering if your guests had a view as to when sort of the city urban kind of spots became standing room only.
Basically made seats a passe kind of thing. You should be so glad you don't live in Seattle, because it's so much worse here. I'm not even kidding. Thank God I'm moving to L.A. But because the shows start really late here. I think the thing about the seats is interesting. I was thinking about the smoking ban, too, and how that has helped in terms of keeping people in the clubs when they're older.
Well, and the other phenomenon that people remark on is people who go to concerts and bring little kids to the concerts. It's not that unusual to go to a concert at Webster Hall or a place like that, depending on the band, and you'll see people there with 5- or 6-year-old kids that they've brought with them.
Yeah, and I just want to say to those people, get them really good earplugs.
Yes.
Because their hearing will be destroyed.
Yeah.
You know, but the not seat thing, I don't know. It's you got to have the atmosphere of moving about in the club, and also it's also economic. You can fit a lot more people when you don't have seats. So it's really about getting people in the door.
Right. So if you need the support hose, maybe you shouldn't be.
Well, you can bring one of those funny little things that people bring to parades, you know, like this, like a little portable seat. I've actually seen people doing that at clubs. Not even kidding. Maybe
just off to the
side. Collar.
Not okay. Near the mosh pit.
All right. Let's hear from Dan on Long Island. Welcome to Soundcheck, Dan.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right. How old are you, Dan? I mean, sorry for asking.
I turned 40 years old this December, and my take on the generational thing is the backlog of music that I've been exposed to all my life up until the present, makes for a tremendous amount of variety. And on top of that, I've got a 15-year-old, a 13-year-old, and a 9-year-old with the iPod scene, and who also dance competitively, so they're exposed to all kinds of music from that avenue. And I, in turn, expose them to the stuff I like, which they have loaded on their iPod. So it's just going to get even more complicated as things go forward, I think.
Well, someone else, one of you guys mentioned technology. And I mean,
Adam, the
iPod is like, I mean, seems to be the great leveler of the playing field musically.
Yeah, it certainly, I think, changed the rules in some respect. And, you know, the interesting thing, the flip side of the 50-year-old who goes to the concert, the Interpol concert, is the 20-year-old who listens to Joy Division. You know, if you, as someone in the article pointed out, if you go to these big music festivals now like Coachella or South by Southwest, they will often have a big band from the 80s as one of the headliners, like New Order or something, because not only because the music is so similar, but there is a way, for whatever reason, that young kids now are discovering that old music. And I think to them, they don't think of music so much as being old and new or current and retro. They just, it's this great big sea of music that they have available to them.
Let's, before we get back to calls, I wanted to hear a little bit of music from a guy named Sting, who has, you know, whose style has changed quite a lot from the early days, mid-70s, with his band The Police.
Come on!
All right. Old Sting, and now we have new Sting, a very different sound. And dare I say, a more...
grown up?
Very good, very good. Thank you, Adam. A more grown-up version of Sting.
'Cause you were always waiting to be picked to play the game. But when your name was called, you found a place to hide. When you knew that I was always on your side.
Everything was easy then, so sweet and innocent. But my demons and my angels reappeared, leaving only traces of the man you thought I'd be.
All right, there is Sting and Sting, separated by 30 years. Ann Powers, out there on the West Coast, do you think Sting is kind of... is he leading a generation of people who came of age in the 70s into the world of...
in the backseat of a Jaguar, he's leading right. us into the future.
world of middle of the road, kind of, you know, easy listening.
You know, Sting's an easy target for people like me. You know, critics generally hate him because he does make this kind of very accessible version of sophisticated music. Mm-hmm. And critics don't like accessible, sophisticated music. They only like thorny, sophisticated music. So, and also, you know, his persona, people have trouble with it because he's sort of the ultimate capitalist figure, in a way, international man of good taste. But my opinion is, like, first of all, I think it's really interesting how he started kind of like Paul Simon, who's also got a new record coming out at 65 now, started actually quite interested in international music, just more hard-edged kind mm-hmm. of international music, in both cases reggae. And Sting and Paul Simon both have gone through to be more interested in world music, and then Sting's gotten interested in jazz. On the pro-Sting front, I'll say, you know, he has one of the most eclectic bands in all of popular music. On the anti-Sting front, I think he presents it in such a way that it really sort of like reeks of adulthood in a way that I think Adam's subjects would find offensive. So, and I just want to say, I'll go out on that on this point, but we should talk about Sheryl Crow too, who was duetting with Sting on that.
Right.
So in a minute, we can talk about her.
It seems like there's basically three models. There's the Rolling Stones model, where you essentially play the same music your whole career and wait for people to kind of catch up to you or discover you.
Right.
There's the Sting model, where you kind of start out playing quote-unquote young music that's kind of subversive and challenging, and then you switch to a kind of older sound that's sort of comforting and soothing and vaguely terrible. And then – sorry, I had to. And then there's the Madonna U2 model, which
right.
is the – you actually try to kind of – continue to cater to the tastes of a young audience by consistently reinventing yourself.
Right. So right. We have some artists who, you know, seem to be losing their edge and almost emblematic of an audience aging into, you know, middle of the roadhood. and then you have artists, as you say, like I would throw David Bowie out there too, U2, mm-hmm. Madonna, people who seem to somehow be able to keep an edge over the course of a period of time.
But it's funny with U2, for example, because who I love, they're like my favorite band, but they tried to go innovative and they succeeded on Octane Baby, and then they kind of took a hit when they tried to get more involved in electronica and dance music,
yeah.
youth music, and then they basically went back to their older sound.
Right.
And the other thing they've done that I think is interesting is they constantly talk about how they're reinventing themselves, and this is a strategy too. There's an extra musical side to all of this, which is the persona that the band's presenting.
Mm-hmm.
So if you constantly say, "Hey, we're doing something new," then people are going to see something new even when it's not new. That's just very savvy marketing.
All right, let's see if we can sorry to cut you off there, Ann. Let's see if we can squeeze in one more caller before we call it a segment. Cassandra joining us from here in Manhattan. Hi, Cassandra.
Hi, how are you guys doing? This is a great conversation. I'm just, I'm a split off into another whole thing with music these days, because I'm a 40-ish person as well, and I was into listening to Joy Division and people like that when I was coming of age. But now I've sort of evolved into something completely different. I've moved into the sort of European sound of like world music, but not world music, but more like the chill out music of Ibiza and Brazilian music and that sort of thing, because you can dance to it. It's got jungle funk to it. You can do all this sort of stuff, and it's music that's really, I don't know, it appeals to my knowledge of rhythm and blues, for example. It appeals to my sort of techno side of my life, where, you know, I was listening to, you know, people like the Heads and people like that.
So you mean, Cassandra, the more down tempo stuff that you hear after hours in the clubs in Hamburg and London and places like that.
Exactly. I love that stuff, and that's sort of like it's becoming my obsession with that kind of music these days, from Moby to, you know, Gorillaz, people like that.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, my 40, so, you know.
All right. Well, Cassandra, it's an interesting tangent. Thanks very much. I also want to mention an email that we got from Michael in Brooklyn, who writes, "I don't think it's impossible to listen to both jazz or standards or classical, etc., and indie/modern rock. Why can't you have it all? I've got both Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah and Rosemary Clooney on my iPod, and I love it." Sounds good to me. We're going to have to leave it there. Let me thank Ann Powers, who's been on the line. She's the incoming music critic at the Los Angeles Times, joins us occasionally on Soundcheck as well. Ann, good to talk to you again.
Thanks.
And Adam Sternberg recently wrote an article about the aging or the non-aging of the music hipster here in New York for New York Magazine. Adam, thank you for joining us.
Thank
as
you.
Well. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. Thanks for listening to Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Every day we dig into what's happening in music, and you can hear everything we do and check out our other podcasts at WNYC.org or on iTunes. All of this is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.